Bernard de Montreal. Preparatory communication number 19. Centricity and egocentricity. It is not a question of confusing egocentricity with centricity, since egocentricity is a subjective manifestation of the ego directly shaped by the character of the individual, and drawing its way, its color, its manifestation, from the temperament of the individual. Egocentricity is a lack of maturity. It is a natural inability to put oneself in the shoes of others, to not see a situation objectively outside oneself. It is an inability to be truly human in the universal sense of the word. Egocentricity finds its place in man because he is not aware of the power of the intelligence of consciousness in him who tries to equalize his relationship with men, without depriving him of the intimacy of the relationship that it has with him. The egocentric type never succeeds in detecting in others certain virtues that would make him a more amiable being, more respectful of others, more equal to others, in the universal consciousness of man. The great misfortune of egocentricity is not that it prevents the individual from really being a man, a being with the power to communicate, to extend outwards the creative faculties of his consciousness, but rather the fact that the egocentric being is unable to see the world around him as it is, because he himself is too blinded by a false conception of himself based on a constant reduction of his perspective towards others. In egocentricity, there are different forms of immaturity. For example, there is the immaturity of love, the immaturity of knowledge, the immaturity of interest in others, the immaturity of the perception of others, the immaturity of the real perception of oneself. In other words, egocentricity is a manifestation in man of man's immaturity. All maturity requires that an individual can equalize his relationships with men in order to form, in the environment in which he evolves, an equalizing society insofar as each individual has the respect of the other, without being equal to the other in creative ability. On the other hand, a centric being, a conscious being, a being who realizes in him the pulsation of this intelligent consciousness and this consciousness which equalizes the relationships between men by virtue of the universal law of man, allows the individual to fully realize himself in his internal power, while fully respecting the power, the capacity for realization of others around him. The centric being does not seek to diminish his relationships with society, with his entourage, but rather seeks to constantly equalize his relationships in order to create in his personal life an atmosphere that constantly generates a new form of energy, so that the interaction between him and men is an interaction that seeks more and more to flourish and become creative. The centric being does not seek to condition his environment according to psychological pretexts that are part of his subjective nature. On the contrary, he tries to constantly renew values with his surroundings, provided that these values are made possible by the very fact of his constant attention to their development. On the other hand, if these values are not possible, the centric being withdraws and reorganizes his life according to other possibilities that exist within him. If we return a little to self-centeredness, we discover that the egocentric being has eyes only for himself, while the centric being has no eyes for himself. But he has eyes to see around him whether the relationships between him and society are healthy and have a balanced character, where creativity can be generated. Where the egocentric being will experience, for many years, a certain disdain for others, the centric being will constantly seek to establish, between himself and others, a relationship of communication, a relationship of balance that will serve both to the life lived by him, and to the life lived by those with whom he will be in contact. Many beings suffer from egocentricity because they do not know that there is a universal consciousness in them, whose rhythm and pace are constantly developing. As the being begins to see and penetrate the illusion of his own ego, when this being has begun to see beyond this illusion, he loses this self-centeredness and gradually acquires another form of consciousness directly related to universal consciousness that over time gives him a centricity based on the close relationship between the soul and the ego, rather than on the relationship between the ego and the personality. The egocentricity is the relationship of the ego to the personality, while the centricity is the relationship between the ego and the soul. Of these two relationships, the one of centricity is the most fundamental, because it determines in man the possibility of generating in his social environment, constantly, a greater love of others, a greater love of man, without depriving himself and preventing him from living. While egocentricity will seek, even in a subliminal way, to wean the links between itself and the outside world, without realizing it, without often wanting to, because precisely, he does not have the maturity necessary to see the damage it creates beyond the border of himself. If we compare egocentricity with centricity, it is to help in the understanding to those who are about to discuss these two different conceptions of the human being, and to allow them to fully appreciate the nuances of the difference between these two states of spirit. Where egocentricity directs the psychological organization of being, centricity organizes the psychology of being. That is, where you find centricity in man, you will be able to detect the penetration of the consciousness that organizes man's thoughts and feelings, so that man is increasingly recognized in his environment as a healthy, balanced, and natural being. Many times, egocentricity will manifest itself as a certain strength of character, but notice that in any strength of character based on personality in relation to a predisposition of the ego to immaturity, you will find in this strength of character a flaw, somewhere along the way, somewhere in your relationship with the egocentric being. And this flaw, at some point, will create a division or even a rupture between you and this being. On the other hand, you will find in the centric being, in the being that becomes more and more centric, an increasingly natural way of approaching the relationships between men, of approaching value in ideas, of approaching the conception of the world. And you will see that the centric being is not really a subjective being, but an objective being whose growing consciousness is becoming more and more the envelope of personality and ego. From the moment that you know how to recognize in the centric being the superior quality of the conscious man, it will be more and more difficult for you to deal with human egocentricity, because you will have discovered in this being a universal quality, which belongs by right to all men, provided that these men are conscious of a greater dimension in them than the simple subjectivity, based on the appearance of personality and the concrete aspect of character. To detect the difference between centricity and egocentricity, one must be aware of the existence of the reality of centricity inside oneself. And when we have perceived a little, even only a little, of the reality of this state of mind, which is really a state of the soul, it is impossible for us not to be able to differentiate between these two states of mind. Such that any possible contact with other human beings becomes a different contact, seen and perceived in a different way, because precisely centricity in itself has allowed us to detect the natural, objective expression of man, versus the unnatural expression of man conditioned by his personality and enclosed in an ego that cannot see beyond himself. Centricity in man is not only a state of mind, but it is also a power of life that allows him to live his life in exchange with others, but never against others. While egocentricity in man forces him, because of the lack of maturity, because of the real impotence of the natural temperament, to manifest himself in a conscious and vital way in accordance with the laws of life, such that the egocentric being is incapable of being perfectly in balance with others because he has not yet found in himself the perfect balance. Although his egocentricity may give him the illusion of well-being, the illusion of maturity, the illusion of autonomy, this illusion is still based on a personality who has not yet discovered the real aspects of the ego and the very reality of the conscious ego. If the centric being must one day see within himself that any manifestation of life passing through the path of the ego is a manifestation of a universal consciousness, it becomes evident to him that any other form of manifestation of the ego is subjective and must be considered as a distortion of the reality of man, meaning an infirmity of the real character of man, and of the universal character of the latter. The exploitation of man by man is based, precisely, on the state of mind that we call egocentricity. The exploitation of man by men is the refusal of the ego to consider with lucidity and precision the role in the life of all men. So that this incapacity, multiplied on a very large scale on a planet, leads a civilization, a people, a nation, or several nations, eventually, to the conquest of the strongest over the weakest. where egocentricity becomes a dagger in the back of man. Centricity becomes a channel through which the individual feeds other individuals around him. Because he has the internal power to be embellished by a vision of himself that is not distorted by qualities, he gives himself according to the hearsay of the surrounding society. The supramental consciousness is the door that allows man to live centricity and to develop in himself the necessary qualities that will allow him in time to develop this centricity to such an extent that any manifestation of his ego is in balance, in total harmony with the universal consciousness in him, by which the universal consciousness is reflected among all men. The egocentric being can never find in life a total and real support point for his existence, because all formulations of the desires that he will undertake to develop and live will always manifest a real inability to integrate what he really is with what he believes he is. Such a situation, if it worsens beyond the reasonable limits of egocentricity, will make this being, eventually, an unhappy being, a lonely being, a solitary being. Indeed, where there is unconsciousness in the ego, there is egocentricity. But many spiritual beings are increasingly seeking to free themselves from this outrageous form of personality, in order to come closer and closer to an ideal or idealizing form of their potential. It should be noted that these beings, although imbued with good intentions, will have to realize at some point in their lives that centricity, or the absence of egocentricity, is a faculty of the soul allowing the ego to fully realize itself in the reality of the light of the latter, with the help of a personality more and more harmonized with the ego. Where man enters into the era of egocentricity, we always find two aspects. The first aspect is obviously the absence of a universal consciousness in this man which can give him an objective point of view on himself. And secondly, the inability of this being to realize that there is, beyond himself, another reality that influences the behavior of the ego without being aware of it, or without realizing it. It is when the ego has begun to realize these two points that he gradually begins to lose its egocentricity, and to realize that there is, beyond itself, an intelligent reality that constantly organizes his life plan according to the qualities and defects of the personality, so that the ego can, through experience, become more and more a creative and equalizing force in society. However, the work done by the invisible forces on the ego is constantly thwarted by the personality of the ego, which is blinded by the external and internal forms of life from which it does not understand the laws, and from which he is suffering. The ego no longer has any power of realization, and the forces, the intelligences, who work in the spheres, have great difficulty in enlightening the ego, because the latter becomes increasingly unable to see beyond the steel wall that surrounds it, such that egocentricity increases in man, a natural formula of exploitation of his existence that gradually leads him towards the limits of life, that is to say towards the limits that he imposes on himself concerning the possibilities of life. The centric being, on the other hand, develops more and more an affinity for the infinite realization of life, and for the infinite realization of life stages that are beyond the material world. Unfortunately for the egocentric man, there is no open door to the infinity of consciousness. And that is why today's generalized egocentricity in our modern society is a form of incarceration suffered both by the ego and affecting the personality. Man must become centric in order to be able to realize the difference between what he was and what he can become. And it is through the contrast of the two states of mind that man can most realize the fundamental difference between egocentricity and centricity, or the door to the supramental. If you have difficulty grasping the nuance of this difference between the two states of mind that we are talking about, it is a matter of you realizing in which state you are in while you are listening. If you listen, and your ego is not involved in the dialogue at this time, your state is a state of centricity. If, on the other hand, your ego is involved in the dialogue, your state reflects a more or less developed form of egocentricity. Egocentricity always reflects on itself a life situation. In centricity, there is no reflection. The being is complete, entirely unified in the manifestation of life, of consciousness. And the reflection that we live on the level of egocentricity is totally non-existent. The fundamental rule of measurement for detecting whether there is one or the other is self-reflection. When a situation arises in oneself, the difference between the two states of mind is essential and must be precisely perceived, so that there is a greater perception in the being of the objectivity of consciousness that emanates from the penetration of the universal in man and the reduction of subjectivity in himself. When man has understood the nuance between egocentricity and centricity, it is then possible for him to penetrate little by little within himself, and to realize that the qualities of which he once believed himself to be the carrier are in reality manifestations of the soul through the ego, in order to allow the personality to discover its potential. But these qualities always remain an energy originally manifested from the soul, and not only from the ego. Egocentricity is an unfortunate state of mind, because the man who is a victim of it must constantly suffer during his life from the weight of any form of realization that he wants to make of himself. While in the case of centricity, being, while realizing the permanence of consciousness in him, no longer suffers the weight of the realization of the energy communicated through the ego for the benefit of the evolution of the soul. He simply lives this energy, and his ego is always free of vibration, while the personality continues to be a material support for the ego. It is useless for the centric being to experience the incessant struggle of the egocentric being towards himself or towards others around him, since the being who has become centric has realized that any form of energy that penetrates him is a form of creative energy that serves to organize his life according to a goal that he may or may not know, depending on the close relationship he may have with the directing forces of evolution. Life then becomes easy. Because the ego, instead of being attentive to itself, serves rather as a channel through which the creative forces of consciousness pass through it. Life then becomes simpler, easier, and more pleasant because the ego is no longer in conflict with itself or others around it. But centricity in its most perfect form is not always easy to achieve. Because precisely, the ego is forced to diminish more and more its relationship with the illusion of itself, to enter into a new form of life where it realizes that it is the current of life that conducts its activity, rather than believing it to conduct this activity. Where egocentricity seeks to dominate, centricity increasingly seeks to be guided in all facets of the manifestation of consciousness on the material level. Where egocentricity wants to fight, centricity seeks peace, calm and unity. Where egocentricity seeks to manifest itself, to give itself a status, to give itself false glory, centricity no longer seeks, centricity simply becomes the way of life according to the law of universal consciousness in man. Egocentricity is characterized by a constant effort, with a natural tendency to surpass something. Egocentricity is always in effort. It always seeks to achieve something, or to imprint something in its existence. While centricity becomes more and more passive, creative, that is, it becomes more and more a channel through which creative consciousness manifests itself according to the degree of receptivity of the ego to the energy of the soul. It is often difficult at first for man to understand the difference, to grasp the nuance between egocentricity and centricity. I want to define this difference well, to establish the nuances well, so that those who advance in the consciousness of the supramental can gradually strengthen themselves with precise knowledge, with the increasingly perfect realization of the state of mind in which they find themselves. Becoming centric is much more than a moral value. It is in fact an internal power that forces the human being to become more and more aware of all the weaknesses, all the lacks, all the divisions that exist in him, because of his loss of communication with the intelligences that evolve in the spheres and that seek more and more to enter, at the end of the century, into mental communication with man, so that the egocentricity of the man who created his present condition may be replaced by an integral centricity that will allow humanity, during the centuries before us, to carry out in the greatest consciousness works that will allow all men to be happy, because all men will have been united in a universal consciousness. Egocentricity reflects the decline of man, just as centricity will reflect the new future of the man of tomorrow.